Hi everyone, this is Venture Vitals again. And in this episode, we are very glad to have Denis Kalushkin, who is a venture investor and a very important person in developing venture and startup communities. And actually, Denis, maybe I'll let you introduce yourself in a better shape.
Sure. Thanks, guys, for having me. I'm really happy to join this episode. I'm a principal at New York Venture Capital, i2bf Global Ventures, and the fund operates for 17 years, and I'm with the team for 10 years now. And we invest at early stage startups which transform legacy, boring, outdated, so-called unsexy industries, including digital healthcare. Because on one hand, like healthcare in the United States is about 20% of the GDP, so it's a big chunk of money. But on the other hand, there are like so many inefficiencies and so many problems which we need to tackle. So this is why we at i2bf also look at various solutions specifically for the U.S. business for the U.S. Healthcare market. And mostly we invest in companies which do not require FDA approvals. So typically we invest in some procurement solutions, ML for, EHR integrations, and et cetera. Yeah, but sometimes we do some exclusions. And continuing a little bit back, a little bit about myself. I have an aerospace degree. I'm like a rocket scientist, real. I joined venture capital a decade ago with the mission to, change the world to make it a better place. And definitely, healthcare solutions are one of the very important topics for each person living, and both and that also have like huge economical implications for the life of each of us because we are paying a lot for healthcare in every country. So yeah, that's in a nutshell about myself. I also do a few other activities. I have a media project, Ask VC, where I share information about general topics of raising funding, understanding how VCs make decisions, etc. Do some events, tracking, mentoring, advising, and also a big fan of space. We also run a media space ambition where we cover various space-related topics, space-related businesses, etc. Yeah, happy to share. Happy to answer to your questions. Happy to share whatever I can.
Well, hello, Denise. That's impressive. You managed to cover about six questions I was going to ask, so that's amazing. You're the degree of mastery of telepathy. But what stands out, I'm sure this is not just my case, but when you present and pitch yourself to people that have not met you before, they remember, oh, it's the rocket scientist guy. So that's what I remember. And that's what I'm curious, most curious about. And I was wondering, is there something that, based on your rocket science studies, you learned that you can apply now in the VC world? For example, I remember, and I don't know the equation, but there is a special rocket equation which calculates, how much fuel and how much, how heavy the satellite can be, and it helps you calculate like how much oxygen and nitrogen, what is it? Oxygen and hydrogen you have to squeeze in that rocket so that it can get a kilogram of cargo in orbit. And it's a pretty it's not a straightforward thing because like the fuel just needs to bring up the additional fuel that will bring, etc. So I don't know, but is there something like that, an equation or a principle that you can take from the rocket world and you actually use it or adapted it for the venture capital world? So that's my question.
Actually, the like The most important takeaway from my aerospace degree was like every problem I deal with in venture capital is not a rocket science. So I say like, okay, I dealt with the more sophisticated things, including like, you know, theoretical physics, quantum mechanics, etc. So I figure it out. I can understand this stuff. So that's the most important takeaway. And the other important thing is to make, you know, oftentimes when you make decisions about investing in startups, you should see like foresee something in the future. Say like making a suggestion what how it will develop, etc. So you need to be, you know, rational a little bit and a little bit visionary, a little bit rational, but composing and forecasting and you know, logical reasoning is really helpful. So that's these are the two things which helped me. And the third thing is really unusual, because of my education, I have a lot of you know, smart guys and girls working across the globe in various industries. Whenever I need to understand something, I can leverage my alumni network to find a relevant person to talk about quantum computing, like healthcare, satellites, cybersecurity, you name it.
Denis, this is Venture Vitals, is a like a digital health podcast. So, for our audience, I think this will be very interesting. So when you and you mentioned you really invest in digital health startups as well. So, what is criteria when you consider a digital health startup that you like going to invest? So is it like it's the same procedure with other industries, or is it something special where when you estimate digital health?
In our case, we, as I said, we don't look into some solution and solutions which require FDA approvals. So, in most of the cases, we skip this regulation part. So, if you're and if you look at like company which is implying machine learning for note taking, for you know, for doctors. So yes, there is some regulation you need to comply with, so get some certification, but it's not that sophisticated. So in this sense, it's more like the like estimate as making decision of investing in digital healthcare startup is more like to invest in vertical SaaS startups or vertical marketplace startups, because it's like legacy industry which requires, you know, some specifics, some you know, integrations with specific with specific solutions relevant to this particular industry. And it has actually more in common when we make decision. It has more in common, for example, in with startups which are operating in, you know, IT solutions for airlines, because also regulated the industry, also need some vertical solutions, etc. So for us, we when we make decisions, we assess several things. First, it's really important to look at the team. Like we try to understand like if the team is capable of delivering this solution. Then we look at the market size, and we love to see markets. We like to see markets like above $1 billion in total addressable market. Then we try to answer the question like, is it the right timing for launching this startup? Because many problems in digital healthcare, as in any case in other industries, they exist for decades, but probably there are some drivers. And in case of digital healthcare, the drivers could be purely regulatory. Like there is a new law, new regulation you need to comply with, and it could be an inflection point for building your startup. And then we look in, of course, we look into competition. But the specifics, when you make decision in this particular industry in healthcare, you really need to understand the specifics of how the market operates. And this is why we mostly invest in the US startups, the US healthcare, digital healthcare startups, because US industry, healthcare industry is different from, for example, European industries, like a little bit different set of stakeholders, regulation, etc. Yeah. Of course, we look at the metrics like MRR, you know, ACV, and try to understand like how fast the startup could be growing, because in digital healthcare, because it's a regulated industry, sometimes it could be a little bit tough to sell to the clients. Could take longer to get the necessary adoption, etc. Yeah.
So this looks like pretty much similar as any other industry, but with that we can encourage startups that listen to our podcast, please approach I2BF, and maybe if you have, as Denis mentioned, so if regulation is not a big deal for your solution, so for example, we can mention five startups that follow 510K classification that can match. So I mean, those that already were like approved previously, like so 510K is something that already existed. So it is a very like simple procedure to get FDA approval, and very like in a very predictable time scope. Actually, you mentioned several activities you participate. So we will all we will provide information on all of them below this podcast. You will see. With this, here is my question. And these activities are pretty well known. And for example, this venture analyst course you provide for free for anyone who wants to to know what is it, how to become a venture analyst. As far as I know, there are several thousand graduates of this course already. My question is, why are you doing that? It's like for several years, yes. So there is some value, obviously, for the audience. But what is the value for you? Why are you doing that?
Yeah, sure. I'm a little bit of a weirdo guy. So I have a personal mission. So whatever I do, and including having this podcast today, is because I want to do something which is in line with my personal mission. My personal mission is to help people who have leverage and have ambitions to make a positive impact for the future generations. And of course, startup founders and specifically deep tech startup founders are the people who make our life better. But what I see is that oftentimes people lack the knowledge, understanding of some things, and I decided to provide this transparency. So like the course, like my LinkedIn, information I publish in my LinkedIn profile, in YouTube, etc. All I want to do is provide you, the founders, the instruments to better deliver, like to better perform, to better understand what VCs want from you, to better understand how to prepare for that, to better understand what you can change in your business right now, so that you will be more successful, both in terms of sales and building your business, as well as fundraising. This venture analyst course, actually, most of the participants are founders, because they just want to understand like how VCs make decisions. And I like, show the framework, what we pay attention to, and it makes people to understand better what really VCs want from them, and why I do it for free. I actually remember myself like 14 years ago when I was starting my journey, and like I didn't have a lot of information about venture capital. I didn't even know the word. And I remember how it was so tough for me to gather those pieces of information, and it took me a lot of effort, time reading books, etc., to better understand how to make investments, how all this industry works. So I kind of distilled this information in a 1 month course, so that the future investors, both business angels, accelerators, future venture analysts, or the founders, first-time founders, they could get this information fast and for free, so that it could change their life. So this is why I'm doing this work.
Well, Denise, that's impressive, and I like your mission to for people to be able to make an impact. And if they feel that's in the investment arena, then you teach them the basics so that they can become more natural and impactful. For me, I'd also love to be in a part of an investor. But still, I somehow feel a barrier that probably isn't there, that you need to be, I don't know, a banker for 20 years and understand and have all these connections around the world to the Rothschilds and et cetera. But probably it's not the case, because then I meet investors like you or some of the guys around Celestinus, and they are just easygoing, normal young people, obviously without tens of years of experience of financing huge infrastructure projects or whatnot. So that's a very good thing. But still, I'm fascinated by your space inclination or your history and fascination of space, because you can't help it these days. Space still begins to be the horizon of human progress. We hear about Elon Musk and the Mars mission and the deep space exploration. So I always think about these like deep tech links to deep space, maybe in some way. And as a physicist, you might find some allusions, but I also learned that you have this space ambition project. Maybe you could introduce a bit. And how do you find time on top of your VC or investor-related activities to still cling onto space with the Space Ambition project?
So, first of all, like space is my love, has been my love since 5 years old. So I remember myself watching first time the cartoons about robots, transformers, which were jumping from one planet to another, as if they were taking the taxi, and it was like the moment of inspiration, and it follows me all my life. So, and even I joined I2BF because of their investments in there was a company, Planetary Resources. Like in 2013, they were going to mine asteroids. Like, how cool is that? There is money from Richard Branson and Larry Page. And yet back then he was working in a bank. Yeah, the other thing is, if you, I did this experiment numerous times. So there is a pretty big chunk of people in VC industry, both founders and VCs, who love space. Why? Because space is actually a science fiction in real life. So it's the most futuristic thing you can have. This is what motivates me. I just love watching movies about it. I just love reading and hearing about it. So a couple of years ago, I just decided so, and especially actually, the high moment was for me the pandemics, because this was the time when you understand you can die any day. Of course, it turned out not that severe, but during lockdown, you didn't know that. And I decided, like, if I love this, let's do something. And let's find people who could be helping out me. So we gather just a group of volunteers helping out, and I'm not running it like myself only. So of course I write some articles, I organize some events, and I provide some insights to other people, and I try to use the resources I have, the knowledge I have as a venture investor, the inspiration I have, etc. But I'm not doing it alone. And the interesting thing was that when I started doing just something, like we started to write articles, and we soon enough we found that so many people want to help you. At some time, so like at some point of this journey, we actually had like more than 20 volunteers helping us with researches, finding information, putting together, organizing offline events, etc. So the short answer how I find time for this is I just delegate to other people who are also passionate about it, and I take people who are also outsiders for the industry because it's so hard for them to get in, but now they are like just watching and reading themselves. While we provide them a place where they could meet each other and they could work on something which will be useful, like starting from a simple competitor analysis for some solution. And by the way, speaking of the aerospace, we have a healthcare podcast here. An interesting thing is that there are some implications for healthcare. For example, those labs which are launched in 0G on the ISS and Axiom Space, they actually one of the most widely spoken topics is actually R&D for pharma companies. So it's not only about the dreaming, but also about like actual applications, and applications could be multiple in numerous industries. It's just the playground, space is just the playground for something which you could apply on Earth.
Amazing. Actually, I hope someday we will invest in we'll see some startups that combine space and digital health in their solution. But I have another question. So this year at Web Summit, I participated in the event you conducted, like a side event of Web Summit. And as soon as this podcast is also the main audience is early stage startups, and this was also the event for early stage startups that kind of introduces speed dating with like startups and VC. Could you please tell more if you about this format? Is this form quite unusual form? And what if founders that are listening to us could where they can find it, and what is the value of such event?
So this was the event. This was one of the events which we host across the globes, and this is part of the marketing of our Pre-Seed to Succeed investment program. We'll provide the link. So Pre-Seed to Succeed is a program which is run by I2BF, Altair Capital, Yellow Rocks and Smart Partnerships. So this is a pre-seed investment program where we invest $200,000. Directly as VCs in your capital and charge some portion of it for the program. It's not an acceleration program when you have this cohort 6 months, 6 months demo day after 6 months. It's more we call it investment program because it's tailor-made. So we make decisions as if we are angel investors. And then over the course of 6 months, we not only watch your progress, but we have like weekly or biweekly calls with you, with one of the partners assigned to you as a person, and we discuss what you need right now, what help do you need right now, and we have third-party service providers, helping out to build you like sales, marketing, growth hacking, PR, etc. So we as VCs look at you as if we want to make a follow-on investment on the next round, like 6 to 9 months from now. And we try to understand like how to make your company fundable. So we don't do many deals. So for the last 12 months, we made only 10 investments and we launched it only a year ago. But we got about 2,000 applications from startups. So we did a lot of work to assess and estimate and invest in the startups. So what we are focused on here is we are focused on startups, mostly B2B SaaS, B2B marketplaces, the IT, which target US or West European markets. And why is that? Because the funds which are co-investors in this initiative, they have like the traction in those regions, and the more value we can bring you more value here. And those speed dating events you referred to, we just do like big events in the US, in Europe, or some smaller local events like in given countries like United Kingdom, Spain, Portugal, etc. And we hold those events to mix people, to give the opportunity make a pitch one-on-one, so that you could get more network, more contacts, and just have fun.
Well, Denise, this is great. You are helping the investment and innovation and deep tech. How would you call it? Like a stew to help it reach the state of critical mass and maturity where it finally churns out hundreds of VCs that are really the cutting edge of deep tech investment. My only question is, once the world is populated with VCs like Youngs, who have been through the courses, is it the right way forward that everybody can become an investor in a venture capital fund, my question is, okay, here is I live in this bubble of VCs and startups and techs, but to an outside world, it still seems pretty strange that 20 something should be an investor, because usually it requires some experience and having gone through a lot of failures and mistakes, etc. So how do you see the future of VCs? Do you see this like everybody, let's become a VC in a way, maybe a tiny one? There have been crowdsourcing, crowdfunding, crowd investing. Is there going to be like a AI investing or quantum investing? So what's your prediction for the landscape, how it's going to change? Because I think, to me, it's pretty naive to think that once everybody becomes an investor, it will be the point in time in the future where we can say our mission's done, world is fine, let's fly to Mars or somewhere in deep space. So what's your prediction about the VC or investing landscape?
So, it will always be like a very tiny fraction of the global private and public financial markets, just because of the nature of what we're doing. We're going after companies which are taking immense risk and outstanding returns. So, and this will always be like just a tiny fraction of population which will be doing this. So my estimate, like best guess, is like about 1% of the population in any country. And I'm saying both VCs, angels, and founders. We just, we are actually, our ancestors are like the pirates, those, famous travelers like Christopher Columbus, etc. So we are the people which don't want to to take a status quo for granted and want to make change. And this is a pretty small proportion of people like that. So I believe that it will stay this way for infinite time. I believe that those mass investment market, the mass interest for investing in late stage VC startups, co-investment platforms, it had peak in 2021. So kind of right now, we have some balancing on the market. So some people are leaving the market, including employees of venture funds. I see some people starting either their own business or starting to work in for startups because there was all overinvestments in 2021. So now we are getting to the balance. But what I see also is that I've learned the history of how the venture capital market developed. It started actually in the early 50s. So it's like 70 years plus old industry. So and started in 1990s, it was like the first peak of the industry, and there was tenfold inflow of people. Of course, there was a big crash during the dot-com bubble, and then the new wave of 20-year plus growth, which we experienced last time. So my point here is that the industry became mature enough because there are many stages of investments. There is a path, the clear path of going to IPO, M&A, etc. So it become very, very, very mature industry. And it means that when the industry is mature, then specialization works better. Of course, you will hear that generalist funds provide better returns, etc. But the trick is that within those generalist investors, typically there are specialized teams which are focused on something. And this is why actually I told you, Genny, that this is great that you're doing this digital podcast and the digital initiative, and you're narrow focused on some niche because you will understand the best. You will get the best network, the access, you better understand the problems, etc. One thing I believe is what will be happening with venture capital market is that we will see more teams which are specialized on something. The other specialized on something, and not only in terms of making decisions, but also in providing added value, because this is how you could get the better access to funnel of startup founders in your industry. And I'm pretty sure you in your industry, you see that, with the founders which go after accelerator. The other thing I believe is that there are already 50 plus big funds. So they will become a financial institutions with multi-stage investments added value. So think of it as a Citibank, for example, right? So they have multiple departments, multiple things, and they serve the biggest clients. And then there will be many specialized funds, smaller funds, which don't have such resources, and they will need to adapt somehow. So think of it as regional banks. Or think of it craft beer producers or something. So these are the funds which are specifically focused on some subtopic, and this is how they could stay afloat, and this is how they could win over those big monsters which are getting the best deals. And of course, I don't really believe that we will have 100% the decisions which will be made 100% based on machine learning and AI, but AI could be leveraged significantly for the processes we're having. So first of all, it's one of the things which VCs are doing now is they actively using those scrapers and algorithms to identify the top funnel. Because the good thing about the times we live in is that it became easier for startup founders to cold contact investors. Because before pandemics, there was a lot of like, okay, you should be only introduced. No, we take like cold emails more easily, and there are tons of recommendations how you could who could make cold contact in of investors. And you will be surprised how poorly people write those emails, because we as VCs, we want to meet founders. This is the job. But oftentimes you need like send like 3 to 5 emails up back and forth to understand whether it's a match. VCs will be leveraging more that we already start leveraging artificial intelligence, mostly first of all for automating some basic processes like cold reach out, assessing like first incoming emails, the scraping information, processing basic information, and getting the VC analyst or the partner getting ready for the meeting. So this what will be happening in the next in the next like 5 to 10 years. So VCs would be trying to become more efficient in terms of like the whole this process, because the process itself, it's inefficient. Like if you think about it, like founders need to meet 100 people, 100 people, 200 people to make to close the deal, like this $500,000 or $1 million. This is crazy. It shouldn't work that way. So the market will be working on improving the efficiency of this process. So closing a deal, meeting 10 or 20 people, etc.
Nils, thank you so much. This is very insightful. And nowadays, no podcast or no any like public speaking avoids the topic of AI. This is not an exception as well. Yeah. So I have two more questions regarding this. So still, maybe following Tomasz question, do you think there will be a venture fund that will be completely AI thin, because as you said, that is it's a very mature industry now, so all the processes more or less formalized, and there is a lot of data public. So what is the match, how to find the matching startup, and what is and a lot of presentation of a startup is already digitalized. So maybe there will be some engine that leverages all this generative AI thing, and that can find startup, analyze, and even invest. That's one question. And following this, sorry for I can introduce it to one by one. But you mentioned that you in I2BF invest a lot in SaaS, and there is a kind of SaaS boom now. Kind of maybe a bubble, I don't know. But the question is, if do you think that AI also can just eliminate or maybe substitute all the SaaS? So a new SaaS will be AI generated something. So yeah.
So starting from the first question, I started to asking the question like whether I could be displaced by AI entirely as a professional in 2017, and I never say never, but my personal understanding, so for the next decade, I'm good, because of course it also like we have a lot of information, both public and private, but still, first of all, it depends on the stage where you invest. For if you invest in Series E company, Series D, Series E, of course, it's more like a private investment. While when you invest in early stage company, it's most in most of the cases, you just need to talk to a person. And when you make early stage investments, this is the founders which you're betting on after all. And yes, you can look at some information like their LinkedIn profile, if like they're Stanford alumni or worked in good companies, etc. That's not it's like you can't do this decision based only on this information. What I'm saying is that especially at early stage, there is so much information which is missing, and you can't like. And it's crucial for making a decision, but you can't get it from the digital resources. So I see that in the like in the next decade, it will be more like AI assisted decision making, not purely like go and pay, and it will improve the efficiency of how we like look at the startups, how long it takes the due diligence process, etc. And there is a like way of like the huge room for improvement, but I don't think we'll in the foreseeable future we will have like 100% decision made by based on AI. And I laughed when I started to dig into this topic. I laughed at the point one of my friends, the partners of the VC, said like, Dennis, we're in the service business, so. Even if the decision will be like 80% made by AI, you as the founders, you will anyway, you will need to communicate to us. And we talked about this added value, which brings more value and improves efficiency of the startup. So this part is not going away anyway. So, you know, improving efficiency using machine learning and automation, you will have just more time to work with your portfolio companies and provide some services which provide you, you know, leverage. So I don't believe we will be living in an era where the fund is purely run by AI, but it would be a really, it will be definitely a really good leverage. So we inside ITBF, we also use some machine learning algorithms for scraping, for writing memos, for making competitor analysis, etc. Yes, this is a useful tool. Yeah, this was the first question. And could you repeat the second one?
Yes, will SaaS be substituted by AI solution generative?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I would say that SaaS is kind of like, you know, it's already a mass market, because there are like conferences like and resources like SaaS Talk, SaaS STR. You can find tons of information about like how to grow your SaaS business, what metrics to see, how to make decisions, etc. So when I look at this SaaS, you know. SaaS speak, what I think is it's similar to what happened with you know, mobile apps when I started working a decade ago. So back then everyone was investing in SaaS in mobile applications, but now mobile is just an interface. So I believe that we while SaaS business is growing and it's a big chunk of investments, and everyone understands how to make SaaS investments. I believe that in the future, many of the niches will be smaller, like not big enough for you to build you know, a unicorn. And more and more SaaS companies will just become in, like those mobile apps. It's just IT business, which can't raise SaaS VC money, but it could be still a good and profitable business. So that will what will be happening, I believe. And partially, if you look at this general AI hype right now, so partially it is also connected to this trend to invest in like B2B software, SaaS, etc. Because VCs understand how to invest in software, and yet there is a general AI, whatever automation, etc. We just understand how to do this. And if we talk about will AI kill those, you know, traditional interfaces, I believe it wouldn't kill it entirely, but it will definitely kill some. So it will be a mixture. So part of the existing players, they will adopt AI solutions, but I believe you can't solve all the problems entirely with like text-based interface or like voice. So you will have a mix. So anyway, I believe that especially when it comes to vertical solutions, they will stay not because it could easily be done with AI, but because you need to understand the specifics. So the bigger problems will experience the horizontal solutions because yes, some like there is more room for optimization using AI. But for vertical solutions, my gut feeling is that we'll still have those players understanding specifics, having necessary connections, necessary business understanding, et cetera.
Denise, maybe we are approaching the climax of our podcast. That's a good word for an end. I prefer to call it climax. But there have been a number of predictions, a number of good points that, for me, if I'm an early stage health tech startup, ready to maybe address a VC and talk about helping me grow enormously globally. So I'd like to ask you to, as the cliche goes, to give me an advice what I should do as an early stage health tech startup. I understand that, okay, the right team, there should be a market, we should be the right time, etc. This is a general knowledge. So what may be beyond these general VC rules for a startup that is investable, would you provide me with? And then let's say I'm not US based. I am like rest of the world based, but I still want to target and want to make my entry into the US market because I have a great prototype and I am willing to do what it takes to make it there in New York or wherever you are based.
So the most probably it's a very general recommendation, but first make sure that your clients really, really want or ideally really pay for your solution and like pay it's like pay a lot. Because investors, these are the types of those type of people who like first they can hear it and say, well, it's not what I'm going after. But then, if you show the progress, and if you like over time, for example, it becomes like everyone is talking about it, they will change their mind. So, first of all, make sure that you're doing something clients really need, and try to understand like yes, it's not like a feature, it's something which is utterly needed by our clients. It's so utterly needed that some of the clients really want to pay for your prototype. And this is a good prediction that when it comes to fundraising, you will secure it because you have like a good progress in terms of revenue. When speaking of entering tapping into the US market, specifically for digital healthcare, it is important to start there early because there is a lot of specifics. It depends on, of course, it depends from the niche to niche, but in many cases, there is a lot of specifics, and the product and the business problems could be very different in the United States compared to that you have in the United Kingdom, in France or Germany. So if you are committed to tap into the US market, try to start early, and good leverage could actually be accelerators like yours or like there is Berkeley Skydeck, for example, or Y Combinator, because you will get this first access to the network and to the and the, actually the logo of the accelerator showcasing to the market. This is a good company. That will help you to secure the funding. But the must-have thing If you're, like, for example, a European company expanding to the US market, in most of the cases, the first money you will raise will be either from the network of the accelerator or your personal network, probably the funds which are in your located in your geography. But if you're doing first revenue traction pilots, whatever, in the United States, it raises the interest of your local investors to invest in you. And to secure money from the US investors, in most of the cases, you need to show the first progress on the US market. So if you're going to expand to the US market, try to start selling there as early as possible. And I believe that in many cases for digital healthcare companies, it could be it I wouldn't say it would be easy, but you could if you're doing something really cool and necessary for the market, you could find your place there. It will like it will you will need to pay like get advisors, you need to start like visiting the US, starting building your network, etc. It's a tough journey, and only 15% of the European startups making it, like just starting to expand to the US market. But if you're very ambitious, if you want to build a big company, that's the way to go.
Thank you, Denise. I think this was great encouragement to early founders and those who think to become a founder. And thanks for sharing your insights today. And this was Denise Kalushkin from I2BF, Ask VC, Proceed to Succeed, and more hats. Also, these were your usual companions in Venture Vitals, Tomasz Studenik, and Evgeny
Hi,
Shvarov. And
guys.
so,
Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Denise. Thank you, Denise. And I still think that deep space, deep tech, and deep brain are somehow interconnected. So maybe it's one of your added value that you can help also the people you are around and who are in your network discover these, connections.
Hope so too. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Okay, guys. See you at the next episode of Venture Vitals pretty soon. And thank you, Evgeny, for still being on the Venture Vitals team. It's great not to be alone in the deep space.
For sure. Thank you, guys. Bye.